everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Mail. My name is Alan Gygax, and today we are getting back to education. It is about damn time for that. And we are going to pick up where we left off in the Carrier Academy. So our last slide was about the different postal positions. I talked a little bit about your supervisors, what they do, and why it's important to try to get along with them if you can. Now we move on to the time clock. So these slides that I'm working from for the Carrier Academy are so dated that they still show the old electronic badge reader, the EBR, which essentially nobody uses anymore. I'd be surprised if anybody uses it, at least as a carrier anymore, because now we do all of this on our scanner. So I'm going to skip a few of these slides, and we are going to talk about clocking in on your scanner instead. So when you start your day, you pick up your scanner and you're going to press the yellow button on the side to wake it up, or you can press the power button and it'll go immediately to a login screen where you're supposed to scan the barcode on your badge. Pro tip, I have taken, a lot of carriers take a picture of their badge. That way, if they ever forget their badge or if it's just not handy, you can scan the barcode on your phone on the photo. But if you have, I don't know if Apple, whatever the Apple equivalent of Google Wallet is, they probably will do it too, but for sure on Google Wallet, because that's what I use, I was able to put the barcode from my badge onto Google Wallet, and that will like brighten the screen and make it exactly, so make it easy to scan. And so I don't even use my badge anymore. I just scan my barcode on my Google Wallet and do it that way. So anyway, you sign in with that, and then you'll have a choice of what type of worker you are, and generally you're going to choose city carrier, although you may choose something different based on what type of work you're doing. And then that will set up the scanner for whatever work you're doing, for what you're going to be doing for that day. And then you go through, you clock in, it automatically starts you in the office. And, or if you're doing some other kind of work, maybe it starts, like, I know there's one that says like clock in with travel time. And so there are various ways to clock in, but generally for your typical day, you're going to clock in. It's immediately going to put you in the office. It'll ask for your vehicle number and then it wants you to do a vehicle check. And probably what we should do is immediately go out and check the vehicle while the scanner is sitting like that. But at least at my station, the first thing we do is have a morning stand-up where the supervisor talks for a few minutes and tells us about the day, gives us a safety message or whatever. And so we all just lie on that and just say, did you do a vehicle check? Yes. Did you find any damage? No. Or sometimes I say yes if I know my vehicle already has damage. Whatever it is, it doesn't seem to matter anyway. It's another screen that you have to get through in order to get started. So that is clocking in. Then, let's see, for your route assignment, you have two options. You can either enter the route number manually, or you can scan a barcode that inputs the route number for you. So if you put it in manually, then it's going to be your zip code, and then it'll be, there should be a letter that's already in there automatically, a C if you're a city carrier. So it'll be like, for me, 89121C015, and that is my full route number. Also, at my case, there's a barcode that I can scan that has the route number on it, and you can scan that barcode. It inputs it the same way. All right, so that's the beginnings of using the scanner. We'll get to more on the scanner a little bit later, but right now, we're just supposed to be talking about clocking in, so that's how you clock in. Next slide is safety. So it is your responsibility to work safely. You are supposed to learn and use all safety rules and procedures. In the academy, according to the documents that govern the academy, you're supposed to be given an EL814, which is a safety handbook. If you didn't get one of those in the academy, maybe ask for one, because this has the different safety procedures that you're supposed to be responsible for knowing. So if you have safety issues, at least in theory, you and management are supposed to be on the same team. And you should be able to go to your supervisor and say, hey, I noticed this safety issue. Let's go ahead and get it fixed. Like maybe there's lights out in the parking lot. or there is oil spill on the loading ramp, or, you know, whatever it is, you should be able to go to your supervisor and submit your suggestion for whatever the safety issue is. And again, they will work with you to get that safety issue abated, because they don't want safety problems either. If for some reason your manager, your supervisor doesn't act in a cooperative manner when you bring that safety issue, or maybe they can't do anything about it, whatever their excuse is, you have a couple of options. You can go to your union steward, and sometimes the steward can put a little bit of pressure onto that supervisor. Maybe they can even file an Article 14 grievance on a safety issue, because it's management's responsibility to provide us with a safe working environment. The other option you have is to go to your safety captain. Your station should have someone who is designated as the safety captain, and they are kind of the go-between between carriers and management where safety is concerned. And so you bring it to their attention, and they can lean on management, hey, we need to get this safety issue fixed. Or there is a postal form, the form PS1767, and that is the report of hazard or unsafe working condition, or maybe it's vice versa, unsafe working condition or hazard. Either way, it's a form that has multiple copies, and in the box on the top, you write what the issue is. And, you know, that there is a hornet's nest in the break room. And so you write that up. And then when you give that to your supervisor, what's cool about that form is, A, they have until the end of their day to respond to it, and B, they have to respond in writing what they're doing about that issue. And then you get a copy of that response. And the supervisor doesn't want to write in there that I'm ignoring the issue. You know, they want to put that they're taking some proactive step. And so that puts a little more pressure on them, because one of those copies goes to like the district safety office, and the district safety person really doesn't want to see that, oh, I'm ignoring this problem. So that tends to get results. And if you bring safety issues to management's attention and then they retaliate against you for that, there are legal protections for you, like whistleblower, OSHA laws. Hopefully it doesn't come to that. But again, everybody's supposed to be on the same page with safety. So that's how you handle safety issues. By the way, if management wants you to work in a way that you think is unsafe, that's one of the situations where you're actually allowed to say no to your supervisor. That, let's say they want you to drive an LLV that has exhaust fumes coming into the cab. That's something that happens from time to time. You can absolutely say no to that, because that puts you in danger. And the standard is supposed to be like danger of life and limb, but that is subjective. You know, fumes into the cab, that could put you in danger of life and limb, because what if that gets you lightheaded and you get into a crash? So it's kind of, it's up to you, though, to enforce this and to make sure that management doesn't put you in an unsafe position, make you work in a way that's unsafe. All right, next, the number one type of accident, injury, no, the number one source of injury for carriers is slips, trips, and falls. You trip over something, you sprain your ankle. I know for me, I've had one loss of work time injury, and it was a sprained ankle. I was walking across the lawn, didn't see a hole, stepped in it, cranked my ankle, and I was unable to perform my duties for a couple of weeks or whatever it was while I was healing up. So that's easily the number one most common injury. Number two is back injuries or lifting-related injuries. We wind up having to lift fairly heavy things, or we have to lift at awkward angles, and that can cause injuries. So you want to do whatever you can to protect your back. And there are a couple of steps that you can take to help minimize your risk of injury when you're lifting something. So the first thing is you want to just test the load, see how heavy it is. And that might mean if there's a box on your ledge, like let's say it's a small flat rate box. Don't just pick it up out of hand, presuming that it's going to be light, because with flat rate boxes, the shippers pay the same rate no matter how much that box weighs, and it can weigh up to 70 pounds. I used to deliver to a place that dealt in precious metals, and there would be like a solid bar of silver inside of that priority box, and that thing was heavy as hell. Or people get bullets or like steel targets for guns. and car parts and some of that stuff, even though the box isn't that big, can be extremely heavy. And then big boxes, even more so. Like, dude, I used to deliver to this place called EBC Brakes. And they did like disc brakes and calipers. And oh my God, that stuff was so heavy. So anyway, first thing is test the load. See how heavy it is. If the load is too heavy for you or if it's awkward, sometimes a box can just be too big to lift safely on your own. You can always ask for help. And in my experience, people will always say yes, your coworkers. Hey, can you help me get this into my truck? They're always going to say yes to that. Especially do that if it says team lift right on the box. Because you know, if you go to lift something that says team lift and you get injured lifting it up, management's going to say, why didn't you ask for help? It says team lift right on it. So yeah, ask for help for stuff like that. But then the question becomes like, okay, now that I got this into my truck, how am I going to deliver it when I get to the house? So there are a couple of ways you can handle that. You might go knock on the door and see if somebody is there who can help you lift it out of the truck and get it to their door. And that's fine. You know, if they decide that they're going to help you with that, that's no big deal. You might want to use a little bit of judgment. If it's a 80-year-old lady who's all feeble and on a walker, you know, maybe she's not going to be able to help you lift that even if she says okay. But for the most part, somebody says they'll help you, great, because they want that item. I mean, they're going to have to deal with it once it's in their house anyway. So that's one option. Another option is to maybe bring a dolly. And so you can like push it out of the truck onto the dolly and then bring it up to the house with the dolly. Or maybe you can back into their driveway, push the item out that way so that you're not having to carry it. There are a number of options, but ultimately, if you can't carry it safely on your own and there's no help, then you're going to have to leave a 3849, a left notice slip, and those people are going to have to come to the post office to pick up that heavy item. We're supposed to be able to lift up to 70 pounds as carriers, or maybe it got lowered to 50, but either way, it's a very heavy amount, and that's supposed to be a basic part of our job, but you have realistic safety concerns that, you know, in some cases you may not want to do that. All right, so you decide you're going to lift this box. Then what you want to do is make sure that the weight is as close to directly underneath you as possible, because you want to be able to lift it just straight up. If you have to lean over or twist or something, then that makes you a lot more susceptible to injury. So you bring it in close to you, you're going to bend at the knees, not at your waist, and then you're going to pick straight up and let your legs do the lifting. Don't twist. You want to keep that load in close, as close to your spine as you can. Other things you're going to do to protect your back is when you are getting items, maybe you have like a normal orange hamper. Some places call them a pumpkin, where you get your parcels. So there are removable netting on the side of the hamper. You can take that down to make it easier to get into the hamper to take stuff out. But for me personally, whenever I go into that hamper, whatever I'm lifting, especially like if I'm just getting out my spurs, my small parcels, one hand is on the hamper itself, like on the wall of the hamper, supporting me. And whenever I lean over, I try to have a hand on something to help support my back. Because I'm not a small dude, and my torso itself is heavy. And so if I lean over and just try to straighten up without any kind of support, yeah, I can probably do it. I mean, that's an exercise, back bends, but you never know. You get that little tweak. And you know, the problem with having a messed up back is like, there's very few people who used to have a messed up back. Once you have it, it's pretty much yours to keep. And so this is, you know, these are the things you want to do to protect your back. I mean, even at home now, when I'm getting my clothes out of the front loader washer machine to put them into the front loader dryer, when I lean into that washing machine, my right hand goes into the drum. My left hand is on top of the washer supporting me. And if I'm unable to do that, then I'll get down on a knee and do it, you know, at a comfortable height rather than having to lean over because I'm trying to protect my back. So there are all kinds of ways to hurt yourself at the post office. And so the post office has come up with this form or this, I don't know, it's like a paper, and it is called a job safety analysis. And the job safety analysis is designed to analyze a specific task that we do at the post office and try to eliminate all the accidents that are associated with that task. So it tries to figure out the safest way to do whatever it is that we're doing. And in the Carrier Academy, there are examples of these, and we'll go through them as we go through these slides. The idea is that these are created together with the union, with the employee, with management to figure out like what's the best way to do this job without getting hurt. So the job safety analysis that's in the book covers a very basic task, which is lifting mail from the floor up to a workable height, like putting it onto your case ledge, or like say it's in a bucket on the floor and you're going to lift it up and put it onto the case ledge or onto a like a stool. So it has the basic steps of the job, and step one is place mail on an elevated work surface. But I wonder if there's a way that I can zoom in on this. Boy, I might have to go from memory on this because the type is so small that I can't really read it on my laptop. Hold on. All right, I couldn't figure it out, so I'm just going to do my best. So anyway, in the first column is the basic step. Second column is the potential hazard. And then the third column is the safe work practice, which is what you do to avoid getting hurt while you're doing that. So again, we have this first basic step is just placing the mail onto an elevated work surface, like say your case ledge. Potential hazard number one is placing the mail on a low-level surface, and the effect is that the lifting hazard is repeated. So if you lift something up part way, like you put it on top of another upside-down tub or something, then you're going to have to lift it again to get to where you have to work with it, like to your case ledge. And so safe work practice to combat that is lift it all the way to where you need it so that you only have to lift once. Guys, this stuff really is this basic. Another potential hazard when you're lifting the lifting that bucket is the mail falling to the floor. And then the effect of that would be like slips, trips, and falls. So when you lift it up, you want to make sure that it's squarely placed on whatever you're putting it on so that you don't have that spilling hazard. All right, and then step two would be removing the mail from an elevated surface. So this would be like putting it back down. And the hazard here is using an improper lifting technique. So now like the mail is up on the case ledge, if you go to pick it up, you might be leaning over, you might be too far away from it, something like that. And so to prevent against that, you just make sure that you use those proper lifting techniques every time you have to lift something. Cool. Okay, so that's that. Moving on. Now we get to the post office's zero tolerance policy. And this is like the joint statement on violence and behavior in the workplace. And I'm going to read that to you guys in just a minute. But first on this slide, it says very clearly here, every act or threat of violence, regardless of the initiator, elicits an immediate and firm response. This is what is expected of management. If there is a zero tolerance issue, they're supposed to have zero tolerance toward it, and they're supposed to address that immediately and firmly. The response could result in corrective action up to and including the removal of the offender from employment. And it doesn't just say removal of the carrier, it says removal of the offender. So these rules apply to management as well. All right, so now we get to the joint statement on violence and behavior in the workplace. This was agreed to in 1992 after an incident of someone going postal and shooting people in their workplace. This was a problem for a while that so much so that it became this cultural thing, going postal, where you get really upset at work and you shoot your coworkers. And so the post office eventually had to take action and realize like, okay, we have some sort of culture problem that is causing people to go postal and it needs to be addressed. So all these interested parties got together and they crafted this statement. This was after one particular incident in Royal Oak, Michigan. If I remember right, it just says Royal Oak here, but I'm pretty sure it was in Michigan. And this is now policy for the post office. All right, here we go. Joint statement on violence and behavior in the workplace. We all grieve for the Royal Oak victims, and we sympathize with their families, as we have grieved and sympathized all too often before in similar horrifying circumstances. But grief and sympathy are not enough. Neither are ritualistic expressions of grave concern or the initiation of investigations, studies, or research projects. The United States Postal Service as an institution, and all of us who serve that institution, must firmly and unequivocally commit to do everything within our power to prevent further incidents of work-related violence. This is a time for candid appraisal of our flaws, and not a time for scapegoating, finger-pointing, or procrastination. It is a time for reaffirming the basic right of all employees to a safe and humane working environment. It is also the time to take action to show that we mean what we say. We openly acknowledge that in some places or units there is an unacceptable level of stress in the workplace, that there is no excuse for and will be no tolerance of violence or any threats of violence by anyone at any level of the Postal Service, and that there is no excuse for and will be no tolerance of harassment, intimidation, threats, or bullying by anyone. We also affirm that every employee at every level of the Postal Service should be treated at all times with dignity, respect, and fairness. The need for the USPS to serve the public efficiently and productively, and the need for all employees to be committed to giving a fair day's work for a fair day's pay, does not justify actions that are abusive or intolerant. Making the numbers is not an excuse for the abuse of anyone. Those who do not treat others with dignity and respect will not be rewarded or promoted. Those whose unacceptable behavior continues will be removed from their positions. We obviously cannot ensure that however seriously intentioned our words may be, they will not be treated with winks and nods or skepticism by some of our over 700,000 employees. But let there be no mistake that we mean what we say, and we will enforce our commitment to a workplace where dignity, respect, and fairness are basic human rights, and where those who do not respect those rights are not tolerated. Our intention is to make the workroom floor a safer, more harmonious, as well as a more productive workplace. We pledge our efforts to these objectives. And we have signed on here the Federation of Postal Police Officers, the NALC, the Mail Handlers Union, the post office itself, the National Association of Postal Supervisors, and a number of other unions or professional associations that have all signed off on this. So there's a few things in here that I want to emphasize. So obviously zero tolerance applies to violence, but it doesn't just say violence. It says violence and behavior. So when management is being cruel to you and not treating you with basic human dignity, that's what this document is for. And all parties agreed to this document, including management. So again, it's not just violence. It also says there's no excuse and will be no tolerance of harassment, intimidation, threats, or bullying by anyone. Postal Service... Every employee at every level should be treated at all times with dignity, respect, and fairness. Guys, this is a reasonable expectation. You are a full human being and you have basic human rights. You have basic human dignity, and the post office needs to acknowledge that. You are entitled to, it says in here, a safe and humane working environment. So to me, this applies to the CCA who's being made to work a month straight with no days off, 12 hours a day, you know, on and on and on. Like that, to me, you get into where, you know, humane treatment. That is inhumane to do that to someone because people have lives at home. They have a need for rest. They need to recuperate, things like that. And, you know, making the numbers is not an excuse for the abuse of anyone. That's the joint statement right there. So that is what is expected of management. That is the way they're supposed to treat you. And I think that's where we're going to leave it today, because next it gets into the scanner, and all the stuff on here is all about the old brick scanners, and we don't have those anymore. So I don't know. I'll have to do some improvising for that. But anyway, there's some education for you. Thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you next time.